one moment. I just need to get my book situated, and we will start. The Sutra of the Heart of Transcendent Knowledge. Thus have I heard, once the Blessed One was dwelling in Rajagriha at Vulture Peak Mountain, together with a great gathering of the Sangha of monks and a great gathering of the Sangha of Bodhisattvas. At that time, the Blessed One entered the Samadhi that expresses the Dharma called profound illumination, and at the same time, Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, while practicing the profound Prajnaparamita, saw in this way. He saw the five skandhas to be empty of nature. Then through the power of the Buddha, Venerable Shariputra said to Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, how should a son or daughter of noble family train who wishes to practice the profound Prajnaparamita? Addressed in this way, Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, said to Venerable Shariputra, O Shariputra, a son or daughter of noble family who wishes to practice the profound Prajnaparamita should see in this way. Seeing the five skandhas to be empty of nature. Form is emptiness. Emptiness also is form. Emptiness is no other than form. Form is no other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, perception, formation, and consciousness are emptiness. Thus, Shariputra, all dharmas are emptiness. There are no characteristics. There is no birth and no cessation. There is no impurity and no purity. There is no decrease and no increase. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no perception, no formation, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no appearance, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no dharmas, no eye dhatu up to no mind dhatu, no dhatu of dharmas, no mind consciousness dhatu, no ignorance, no end of ignorance up to no old age and death, no end of old age and death, no suffering, no origin of suffering, no cessation of suffering, no path, no wisdom, no attainment, and no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, since the bodhisattvas have no attainment, they abide by means of Prajnaparamita. Since there is no obscuration of mind, there is no fear, they transcend falsity and attain complete nirvana. All the Buddhas of the three times, by means of Prajnaparamita, fully awaken to unsurpassable, true, complete enlightenment. Therefore, the great mantra of Prajnaparamita, the mantra of great insight, the unsurpassed mantra, the unequaled mantra, the mantra that calms all suffering should be known as truth, since there is no deception. The Prajnaparamita mantra is said in this way. Teyata om gate gate paragate parasangate bodhisoha. Thus Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the profound Prajnaparamita. Then the Blessed One arose from that samadhi and praised Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, saying, good, good, O son of noble family. Thus it is, O son of noble family. Thus it is. One should practice the profound Prajnaparamita just as you have taught, and all the Tathagatas will rejoice. When the Blessed One had said this, Venerable Shariputra and Noble Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, that whole assembly in the world with its gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, rejoiced and praised the words of the Blessed One. Ngala jube ne jong dong ba ne ngu je do jung ngai yi do do jen dru ba bo lo ma yi bu jen zi ni zong ngan ro zo lo sha zi he lo. The fundamental ground is scented with incense and strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha land and offer it. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure realm. Holy lamas high, wrap the sky of your Dharma bodies in massive clouds of knowledge and love, and let them pour upon the earth of your disciples as we are ready, a shower of rain, the teachings deep and wide. Yeah. I send forth this jeweled mandala to you, precious Guru. Idam Guru Radha Mandala Gam Niradayami. Sanjay. So welcome, everyone. Thank you all for attending. So before we get into any more text, any more kind of complex teachings that are going to require an actual book that we follow, we're going to do an overview of the Four Noble Truths and some of the applicable Lamrim meditations that kind of attach to those Four Noble Truths, as well as some of the mind training kind of teachings that are necessary really to present the entire scope of the profound view and the excellent deeds lineage related to the Four Noble Truths, as well as the Hinayana vehicle. So without further ado, Rinpoche, the Denji. Denji, that's Chiran Desilan alone. Hold on one moment, everybody. I'm back. Hi, everybody. Sorry about that. I just wasn't prepared to go into the 16 attributes of the Four Noble Truths right out of the gate. So I just wanted to make sure that I had material that I needed in order to support that, so I wasn't, kind of stuck. So when we look at the Four Noble Truths, they're presented, there's four different truths. The word noble, we can translate as Arya also, because that's really what the Sanskrit is referring to, these four truths that are realized by someone who's seen emptiness directly. An Arya is a being who has seen emptiness directly. So we have these four truths that someone who's seen the nature of reality understands, right? So there are these four things that the Buddha said that kind of make up our experience, our contaminated experience and our experiences of suffering, right? And then the events that would have to take place to reverse that, right? And to become pure and not contaminated and not have to suffer. So we have, within the Four Noble Truths, we have these cause and effect relationships. The first two noble truths, the truth of suffering and origin, show how one is bound to cyclic existence. And then the second two noble truths, the truth of cessation and path, show one how one is freed from cyclic existence. So you have these kind of two aspects of the Four Noble Truths going on. You have these reasons for the sufferings and the experiences that we don't want to have, the reasons they're occurring, and then we also have the way that we can make them stop occurring. And those are presented in the Four Noble Truths. So Rinpoche said the Four Noble Truths are the first, the truth of suffering, the superior or the Arya truth of suffering, second, the Arya truth of origin, third, the Arya truth of cessation, and fourth, the Arya truth of path. And each of these Four Noble Truths has four aspects or four attributes that make up for a total of 16 attributes of the four noble truths. So it says that first, when we relate to true sufferings, okay, so when we look at true sufferings, first, the Buddha said that this is the superior truth of suffering. So we're going to go through each of these four attributes of the four sufferings, making for a total of 16, while also just giving a brief explanation, kind of, right, of what each of the truths are. Rinpoche said that that would be suitable. So we first look at true suffering. So true sufferings have these attributes, right? These attributes of impermanence, these attributes of suffering, these attributes of selflessness, and these attributes of emptiness. So these are the first four attributes, which are kind of complicated conversations that we may or may not get into. But let's just write those four down kind of as the four that relate to the true sufferings. Now, what is the superior truth of suffering? The Buddha stated that it's very obvious to us, right, that we have various types of gross levels of suffering. And we can all admit that we've experienced them in our lives. But the Lam Rim gets into a little bit more detail about what the various types of suffering are. And the reason that there's so much presentation on this, I was just recently listening to the Dalai Lama's teaching about the Four Noble Truths, the recent teaching that he gave. He went into the Four Noble Truths and he said, you know, the reason that we start with this kind of nature is because we can all relate to that. We can all say, yes, I have the suffering of sickness and aging, and I can relate to the suffering of pain and all of these other things. And, you know, so that people can relate to that dissatisfaction right away. And then when you say, well, I'm so dissatisfied, there must be a cause for this, right? Then the Buddha taught origin. But so the Dalai Lama was saying that it kind of leads you down this pathway to be like, yeah, I am not satisfied. What is making this happen? Oh, that's what's making it happen? Is there a way to make it stop happening? Oh, there's hope. Yeah, there's a way to make all this stuff stop happening. You just follow this path and then it stops. So it's kind of like bringing you through the story of your life so you believe there's something you need to do about it, right? Because if you don't have any relatability, you wouldn't have any reason to think that you needed to do something about it. You wouldn't have any reason to move forward on the path. You'd be accumulating information that all just sounds like it is relevant. But you wouldn't be actually turning that into a path which would allow you to transcend cyclic existence. So the Buddha realized that you needed, in order to develop the perfection of effort, you needed propulsion. You needed kind of something to, like a jetpack pushing you into this desire to have effort. So the Buddha started by saying, listen, everybody, I've seen emptiness, and the Buddha's enlightened at this point. This is what everybody is undergoing. Let's start there. Let's start with what everybody's undergoing. And the Lam Rim talks about the 8 types of suffering. We're not going to get into huge details, but the Lam Rim talks about the suffering of birth, aging, sickness, death, encountering what isn't pleasant, right? And then being torn away from what is pleasant, and then not getting what you want, and then being thrown into these aggregates that experience this kind of situation over and over and over again as we die and are reborn. So we're thrown by our karma into this some sort of existence, and then our completing karma fills in details around it. And that happens over and over and over again. And while that's happening, we are experiencing birth, aging, sickness, death, not being separated from pleasant, meeting with the unpleasant, not getting what we want. So we're being thrown into the situation over and over again that has these conditions that are part of it. So in the Lam Rim, those are the first kind of details that they go over, the 8 types of suffering. Then the Lama Tsongkhapa gets into the 6 types of suffering. The fault of uncertainty. We can see in our lives uncertainty. Friends become enemies, enemies become friends. There's nothing that we can really hold on to when we look at cyclic existence in terms of relationships within this life, but then also when we're looking at it in terms of future lives, how these relationships become very, very different in future lives. So there's no certainty that these relationships that we hold in this life will carry forward, right? So this is a type of suffering, right? That we can all relate to. We want these people that are in our lives to kind of carry on, but they could become our enemies in the future, these people we hold so dear. So this is an aspect of cyclic existence that we taste, right? That we can taste right now, and that we can then say, let me use that as propulsion into finding out why this occurs and then getting rid of the situation altogether. And that's really, you know, what's so beautiful about the Lam Rim is it takes you through that by the hand. It says, this is okay. First this, then that. And it's certain that the order is that way, according to Tsongkhapa and Lord Atisha, that the certainty of order is part of the Lam Rim teaching. The certainty of realization of cause and effect and the order in which that occurs is presented very, very clearly in the stages of the path. And especially when you start to look at Jayan Sheba's text and look at the text on reasoning by Basuchuji Jetson and some of these other texts where they make it very clear that you can arrive at this idea through inference that you must realize these things in this order in order to have the final realization, right? In order to realize bodhicitta, you have to realize renunciation. In order to realize renunciation, you have to realize the lower realms are something you'd like to get out of first, because those are just so blatant, right? So these ideas are all presented for a reason. And you know, I really admire the way Pabunko Rinpoche presented this stuff. I know that it at times can just seem like a little much, but he really, really, and Trijung Rinpoche really showed how that Lam Rim goes like this, you know, really goes like in this order, 1, 2, 3, 4, that you should be glancing meditation the entire path, but then you should be focusing on each of the stages until you realize them. You're glancing so that you have these imprints, so you're not, you know, only looking at one topic your whole life, right? It may take a whole life to realize a topic. So you're glancing through all of these topics so you understand what bodhicitta is, all the way up to even highest yoga tantra if you have that initiation. But what we're really able to practice is where our scope is, right? And we have to be honest about what our scope is. We look in the mirror of the Dharma, right? To understand what our scope is. And we focus on that whilst looking at all the other things so that we have the imprints of the entire path. So we have this fault of insatiability. this is, we're now in the second of the six types of suffering, where we're never satisfied, no matter how many riches we get, no matter how many things we have, we never really reach this place of final contentment, where there's no gnawing, right? There's nothing gnawing. There's no, you know, and then we may like have this moment of contentment, but then it kind of goes away because the suffering of change occurs, which we'll talk about. So the fault of casting off bodies repeatedly, you know, you're being reborn, like this thing we have, we've held so dear, we're shuck it off, and then we get a new one, and then we shuck it off, and we get a new one. And the next one we get will feel ourself, right? Our grasping itself will feel just as real of an experience as this one, and we won't relate to Jeff. We'll relate to whoever this next experiencer is, right? Whatever my karma and my afflictions bring about, you know, and whatever, you know, legion, whatever comes about from this next karma will be what my grasping at self adheres to and believes is its reality based on internal and external. And dependence upon those two things, I will then become whoever that next person is. Jeff will be gone. So this shucking off bodies is important because we think about this self we have right now, right? It seems so solid, but then we'll be someone else or we'll be a dog. You know, Pabunka said the only thing that's separating, making us not have horns on our head and long fur is the fact that we haven't died and haven't been thrown into the animal realm, right? That's the only reason we aren't walking around thinking we're like goats or something, like, or whatever animal he was talking about, I forget. Like, you know, something with long hair and horns. And then we're going to believe we're that goat as much as we believe we're us right now. And that's the thing we have to understand about past and future lives, because we think about this path in terms of us, in terms of Jeff. But this path has been a path that's been going on way before Jeff, if I'm here sitting next to Rinpoche, and we'll have to go on way further because I'm clearly not realized. So there's going to be this just this continuum that's got knowledge, right? That Jeff's going to play a part in, but won't be Jeff unless I really, really figure things out in this life. And I like decide that's my name, right? Or something. I don't know how Buddha gets their name, but I highly doubt that's what's going to happen, right? So we have this idea that we're so solid, but we clearly can see around us that we're not that solid. We have this repeated rebirth again and again. We repeatedly go from high realms to low realms, according to the Lamrim. And then the fault of having no companions is that when we go through this process, all these friends and relatives and things that we hold so dear can't bring us. We die, we have bardo, and then next life, there's no companion. It's just our karma. It's just this I, this that goes from life to life, that has this consciousness, that has these seeds, that have conditions that are interacting with them and then making experiences. And then these, so we can have so many varieties of experience and we'll cling to them just as they are. And as we're going through all of this, none of those companions will stay with us according to the Lamrim. Now, of course, our lamas, right? If we have aspiration, our lamas will stay with us. If we have really tight bonds, our Dharma friends, it is said we can connect with and can stay with us. So these relationships and connections, you know, one can argue because of causes and conditions, cause and effect, you're creating causes for connection, right? But we have already done so because all sentient beings are our mother. So it's just so important for us to remember that this life's, in my case, Jeff, isn't who got me here. And isn't who is going to get me there necessarily. It's someone who's working on getting me there, right? But it's a series of events, cause and effects that are going to flip, 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 that will allow my mind to eventually no longer grasp a true establishment and realize this idea of this union of this lack of grasping, which is emptiness, right? And this bliss that occurs. This nirvana is bliss, right? So this bliss that is kind of conjoined with this realization of the nature of reality, we could all be in right now. We could all right now be in a state of bliss without suffering and not grasping at things and having improper mental conduct. And that's the beauty of this. We could all be, We all have all of the ingredients in us right now to be pure beings. We just have to purify the things that aren't pure in order to become, you know, kind of not what our, it's tough to say what our nature is, because our nature is neither, right? But we have that potential to be either. So we have the potential to be pure, right? So that's getting a little bit heady, but I think that, you know, it's important to understand that. And then we have the three types of suffering that we talk about a lot, the suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and pervasive compounded suffering. So the suffering of suffering, pain. I break my arm, I have pain, the suffering of suffering, you know, the suffering of change, is basically happiness, right? Contaminated happiness. You know, our friends that become enemies. When it's too hot, you cool off and now you're too cold in the air conditioning, right? Your car you bought that you thought was the greatest car in the world has the nature of impermanence. So it was the greatest thing in the world. Now it's the piece of junk that you wish you could get something else, you know? That the car, all it did was age, right? Like your relationship with it has changed because of the suffering of change. This nature that all phenomena has, you know, and one way or another, it will change, even relationships, even if you have the relationship that, you know, carries on, you know, for your whole lifetime, that will change. And then the pervasive compounded suffering is this suffering that we're again and again and again having to be born into this cyclic existence. And everyone in cyclic existence, even in the highest realms, has pervasive compounded suffering, has to be born again and again. If you haven't gotten rid of the afflictive obstructions, you will take rebirth because you will have attachment, and attachment proves you will take rebirth. So that's an overview of what those sufferings are. True origins have four. So origins, what are true origins? So Rinpoche said they have four attributes. They're a cause, they're because they possess the root of suffering, their origin, their strong production and condition. I'm not gonna get too much into that. I have all my notes from the Parshin Shittan here. And could go way into it, but I don't think that's going to take hours. So let's just kind of leave it at those names, and then maybe we can get into further detail down the road on that. So true origins. What are true origins? What is the origin of suffering? So now we learn, okay, it kind of stinks what we have to deal with, right? And we all agree, or maybe we don't. We don't all have to agree on that, but I agree with the Buddha that all of those things, that at least the ones that I can be certain of, are not fun. They aren't good. They aren't something that if someone asked me, would you like to continue these? I would say no. And I think most people would say that, like, I wouldn't want to continue these. So if you don't want to continue something, you have to figure out how to make it not continue, right? You have to figure out, well, why is this happening first? And then once you find out why something that, you know, is happening, then you figure out, well, what do I have to do to stop why it's happening? So now we get to the origin of suffering. So Buddha said, and in the Lam Rim, we talk about karma and afflictions being the origin of suffering. So we have these afflictions. We have attachment, we have hatred, we have ignorance. We have all these things that make us kind of misperceive what's going on all the time. You know, we become attached to what we find very attractive. We hate which we find repulsive, right? And then we just kind of like disregard neutrality, right? We just really become like, we have these kind of graspings, and then we react, right? So the Buddha said, you have this kind of going on in you, you have these afflictions, and then you have a reaction that takes place. And then that reaction is called karma. It's action, like, and through your body, speech, and mind, you know, you create kind of through your body, speech, and mind, you engage in action, which then creates kind of a seed for a few further future experience that's concordant with that action that you engaged in. So the Buddha said that there's virtuous and non-virtuous actions. virtuous actions lead to happiness, non-virtuous actions lead to suffering. And the Buddha said that in relation with the afflictions, of course, we're going to engage in non-virtue, right? We're going to try to, like, it's obvious. So we engage in non, when we become attached to something or overly attracted to something, we're willing to engage in all sorts of behavior to keep that, right? Or if we hate someone, talking about them and, you know, trying to get others to not like them as well and say, yeah, you understand what they did. Yeah, can you get on my team and get off their team? You know, we really become very divisive because of this. And Suma, come on. Come on, Suma. So we engage, I lost my train of thought, I'm sorry. So we engage in all of these negative actions as a result of having kind of a polluted mind, right? Having these afflictions. So why is our mind polluted, right? What's driving this pollution, according to Buddha? What's making our mind go like, have attachment and then act, making us think about, you know, bad things and act, say bad things and do bad things? Like, what is doing? Why? Well, the Buddha said that at the root of that is what's called grasping at true establishment. And that's what emptiness is. It's the idea that we grasp at things as being truly established, but things are really empty of being that. So when we use this word emptiness, you can go into this place where you think you're into this dark void. That is not what emptiness means. It means it's empty of having true establishment. It doesn't have it. If a bucket's empty, it doesn't have stuff in it. So an object is empty of having true self. So that's it when we say this word emptiness. And then we say, use this word void. And then it seems really like fancy. But all it's saying is that objects of observation don't have true establishment because they dependently originate. Therefore, they are empty of being truly established. So that's what emptiness means. So according to the Buddha, we're grasping at things as being truly established. We're misperceiving everything. Then this is causing these afflictions to kind of rear up. And then our karma happens. We act. So Buddha said, this is what causes all of these things in the First Noble Truth. This is why we have 8 sufferings, 6 sufferings, 3 sufferings. You know, I'm sure there's like another 25 lists. Buddhism loves lists, right? So this is why you have this. So then there's a pause. Like, well, do you want to do something about this, right? And is it possible this could end? And the Buddha says, this can end. Yeah, this can end. Don't worry, you don't have to have this any longer. But there's a catch. There's some work to do. There's a path that you have to engage in. So the Buddha talked about origins and then talked about the cessation, talking about that there is a potential and that all sentient beings will arrive at this place where they will no longer have suffering, will be omniscient, and will be dwelling in a state of bliss. So the Buddha said this will happen to all sentient beings. And he said that all of these cessations we're talking about have the nature of cessation, pacification, auspicious highness, and a definite emergence. So these are the 4 attributes of the cessation. Then the Buddha talked about true paths. True paths have path, suitability, achievement, and deliverance as part of their characteristics. Deliverance, they deliver us, right? And you achieve a mode of subsistence, like it's non-mistakenly achieved. So all of these attributes have really beautiful reasons for their points being made, but we can look at those at another time. So the Buddha stated there's a path, it's the Arya path. So again, that word Arya, someone who's seen emptiness directly. So that when we talk about path, we're talking about Arya path, the path for someone who's seen emptiness directly. And then also when we talk about path generally, we can say the stages of the path, right? But those are nominally designated as path. We call them path, But when we're talking about this kind of path is a path an Arya, a superior being, has taken, someone who's seen emptiness directly. So the Buddhists made it very clear that you have this predicament. This is why. You don't have to. This is how. And that's really the Four Noble Truths in a nutshell. So I don't think we need to say anymore. We've been really preparing a lot with the fire puja. Rinpoche is quite tired. And, I think it's probably good to stop there, but have questions. So that was just a quick, like real quick. And I woke up this morning or yesterday, everything runs together. And I said, I don't want to do the Four Noble Truths. It's so like abstract. What do we, I can like the Lam Rim, like one, two, three, four, but you get so the Four Noble Truths, well, according to Hinayana, according to Mahayana, according to, how do you give that overview that is relevant, right? That doesn't just sound like information. So I'm going to think about that. Any questions? And as soon as no questions, we'll go off Zoom. And I just want to talk to everybody for a second. You notice how Rinpoche perks right up as soon as I'm done talking. He's like, yeah, I've heard this before. I said it. Thanks. Thanks, Parakeet.
All right, we have two questions. We have Lopsang Lo, although I don't see him right now, but there he is. And then we have Alessandra.
Dashtelag, Jeff Tong, Dashtelag Rinpoche. Sorry, I'm not turning the video on. I'm partially, because of my injury, I'm not wearing my robes these days, and it's just a little embarrassing to
totally
in a t-shirt. So, that's the, in case you're wondering. So the aspect, just that term is a little bit unusual, or we don't, hear it often. And, but in this context, it comes up as these 16 attributes or aspects. So I just wondered if we can ask Rinpoche, in what sense, maybe just keep it limited to suffering, just to kind of make the question direct, in what sense are those four attributes of Mithak, Dungel, Tong, Demit, in what sense are they aspects of suffering or true suffering?
Rinpoche, the dunya, dunya demba, je, the mitapa, dunya wa, damepa, donwa. I don't know if we're going to get through this. He's quite tired, but we'll see, right? Then the mitapa, then the Rinpoche, dunya, Rinpoche, the dunya demba, mitapa, the drawa garre. Garishene, the dunya demba, the mitapa, dunya wa. Damepa, tonwa, tonwa. Then garishene, the jawa gare, the yena, garishene, the tambo, nipa, sumba, jipa, garishene, mitapa. The netsu, the donda gare.
Madaba.
So when we talk about impermanence, we're talking about momentary. Keiji, so momentariness and momentary nature. Then the dunya demba, then garishene the jawa gar the penyun gar garishene the ngatsu the dunya demba mitapa the
gajal te shiva yoro gajal shiva yoro shiva leyo
gasha cheba. Did you understand what that means, Lo Sama?
Did he say kepardu jeba yinzang?
Gasha. This word gasha.
I don't know.
The mitapa.
Kepardu jeba. Then
dunyal demba the gonja. Then ngatsu dunyal demba gonja. Then dunyal demba mitapa yin dunyal wayin. Then the jawa gar. The yenla jidru. The su jiji.
Number jiji.
The number two.
Number she. Do you know the number she? numbers are not 둔다 가르래. 등역이 number 인소 가르래. That's kind of what I'm trying. You could try it.
Yeah, what is this?
등역이 number 사나 number 인소 가르래.
그러면 이제 number 인소 가르래. The mitapa, the dunyawa mitapa, the dunyawa.
Mitapa is the crazy by image.
So you see what? So he's saying, well, why is true suffering impermanent? Because it's momentary. I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of things that a true suffering is. Why pick, what are these four attributes and how do they relate to our realization? Is that what you're asking, Lopsangla?
Not really. I think he answered it fine. I mean, why is it in what sense is it an aspect of suffering? Well, the true sufferings are impermanent because they momentarily change. That makes sense.
Right. I have all the definitions. I was just, all right. So why are, okay, I have your answer here. I wasn't even looking down. So why is impermanence an attribute of true suffering? Because of being produced occasionally. Why is suffering an attribute of true sufferings? Because of being under the influence of contaminated actions and afflictions. Why is selflessness an attribute of true sufferings? Because of not being established as an independent self influenced by impermanent factors. And why is emptiness an attribute of true sufferings? Because it's an emptiness of a pure self that is different, that is tade. So that's in the Parshin. Shittun, you see all that, I think. I think that's where I pulled this from. I don't think I'd find anything that detailed anywhere else that I have in my hands. But yeah, and then it says that true origins are a cause because of being the possessor of the root of suffering. They're the origin because of producing all forms that are its result, suffering again and again. It's strong production because because suffering, its result, is produced with strong force. It's a condition because it is a cooperative condition to suffering, its result. And then true cessations, we have cessation. A separation that is a cessation from suffering. Pacification, because it is a separation that is a pacification of the afflictions. Auspicious highness, it's a separation that is characterized by benefit and happiness. And definite emergence, because it is free from suffering that will not occur again. A separation in which suffering will not ever arise. And then true paths have the attribute of path because it causes one to proceed to liberation. Have the attribute of suitability because of being an antidote to the afflictions, have the attribute of achievement because the mode of subsistence of abiding on the path is non-mistakenly achieved through direct perception. And it has the aspect of deliverance because it is a path that eradicates the roots of the afflictions of suffering. So that's what, those are the, now I understood. It's so funny, I didn't look down. But Rinpoche, the Denji Mita Jutru, the Kanga, the Parshin Shitun, the Seni Kanga Yure, Mitapa Yinde, Dunya Yinde, Damepa Yinde, Tonga Yinde, the Kanga Nga Injike Zuzun. Okay. So that's from the Parshin Shitun, the Panchen Sonandrapas. So Panchen Sonandrapa is the textbook writer for Drepung Losarun thing. And I believe Ganden Shartse uses his textbooks as well. There's a book called The General Meaning of Perfection, which is the general meaning of the perfection of wisdom. When the monks in Drepung study perfection of wisdom for 7 years, I don't know if this is the first one, but this is kind of the general beginning. And then they get into the specifics about it. And so forth. There's different texts. So this text is the general meaning of perfection, the general meaning of the Abhisama Alamkara, ultimately, I would say. Correct me if I'm wrong about that, Losangla. But the root of that would be considered the Abhisama Alamkara, Maitreya's ornament for clear realization. So a lot of the information over the years that we've used when it's gotten kind of more detailed has come directly from that text. All of the teachings on bodhicitta and the four immeasurables and so forth, where we've gotten into more detail than we find in the Lama Rinchenmo, we've gone to either the source of the four difficult points of the Lama Rim, which is a commentary with, I believe, four authors that just, it's so hard to read, by the way. It's this commentary with four interwoven authors in it about the Lama Rinchenmo. And there's like a little tiny like letter like above where the line starts that Jayan Sheba is saying. And there's like a little tiny, this is what Basu Chuji Jets is saying. It's, you know, you really got to be a scholar to utilize that text. But that's what Rinpoche used to explain the Lama Rinchenmo, coupled with this general meaning of perfection by Panchen Sunandrapa. And Rinpoche's Heart Sutra explanation comes from Jayangapi Lodru, who was the author, the textbook writer for Losa Ling before Panchen Sunandrapa. Panchen Sunandrapa's works became like bigger and greater, so they kind of took over his works to use as textbook writer. But Jayangapi Lodru has some really beautiful writings as well. So Rinpoche's Whole Heart Sutra teaching that Brian, you know, you actually have the discs, which I need very badly, somehow copies of. I don't know how. I got to send someone out there. I need that Heart Sutra teaching because I want to go through it. And I really want to, I was going through Rinpoche's massive like texts and I found that commentary by Jayangapi Lodru and it actually became relevant to some other discussion, but it didn't matter. Doesn't matter. That's not the point. And it made me want to go back to Rinpoche's Heart Sutra teaching with the actual root text because I'd never seen it. I just heard the teaching, right? And be able to kind of dive back in with the Tibetan in my hand. So I'm excited to do that. So those are the 16 attributes or aspects of the Four Noble Truths. I have to say personally, I've not really found big connections with them in terms of my practice. But that doesn't mean I won't. But I've always kind of felt a little disconnected from those 16 and how they related. And maybe they're just the aspects, they're the natures of these truths, right? And it's maybe I'm trying to look further into something more, right, than it is. I see Alessandra, I think, has her hand up. I have my readers on, so.
Hi, yes,
thank you. My long vision becomes my short vision. If that makes any sense.
It does. My eyes often get in the way of my seeing, so I relate. So I have, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to pose it anyway, just because I like to have clarity from the source of truth rather than just go ahead with what I think. Is it that, because sometimes when I look at the Four Noble Truths, some things are like, oh, that's so simple. And then all of a sudden I feel like I'm swimming in an ocean or drowning in an ocean that I don't even know how to swim in. So I'm wondering, I'm sorry?
Try to explain what? It. Try to have head full of stuff and then be like, yeah, I'm just going to give a little talk on the, and then you start
well,
to look
I
at
do, it. Because that's what I do. I stop and then I try to talk it back to myself and have a conversation about how well I understand it. It's crazy. You don't even want to see me. So I'm wondering if that is the case because Buddha generally teaches specific to the student and the situation. So if the Four Noble Truths is the broadest spectrum of what reaches the greatest range of capacities, then it might be a little bit confusing when if I'm at one capacity and then trying to understand it from a different capacity. Does that make sense?
Yes. We all have to work within our capacity, right?
Yes.
And that's why I said when we started that we look at the whole path. We look at all of these things, so we have this information, but then we really, and it can become confusing, not to discount that part of it. There's so much information in Buddhism. And then not just the information in our tradition, but then there's all these other traditions, right? that even use different lexicons. So the language isn't even the same about the same. We're talking about the same thing, and we're like arguing, and we're talking about the same thing. It's so yes, I can understand where you're coming from, but I think we have to really just go back to basics at all times and figure out what our core issues are to and where we really are at and what antidotes we need to apply to those things. Because that's what Buddhism is. It's about, we've got this and we have to apply antidotes. And we have to, so the whole path is an antidote, right? Of an abandonment, and an antidote to an abandonment, you know, that we have to get rid of. So we don't all have the exact same number of those or the same emphasis on, like, I may be more attached, you may be more angry. You know, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, in general.
Oh, it's true. You can say it. That's true.
I'm pretty snap casey. You'd be really surprised. I can run with the best of them. So don't be shocked. You've seen it. You've all seen it come out. Come on. We have to work within the framework we can and what capacity we're operating from. Rinpoche, the kondi sombre, the demba je, the nampa kanga pembudu, gangyen sena the teme pembudu, techen pembudu, the nyentu, ranjel, parshin, nga tepa, kanga pembudu, yene, Natsu demba the natsu the susu dopa the jipu chungo jipu din jipu chembo natsu kanga chipa yomare natsu nyomon kanga chipa yomare kashe control moire kashe ducha moire then kontriwa de sansa the demba je lobjon shena that's kali kapudu gangen sena the mom the nangla the mombo yore techen teme then the natsu susu the pain, kandrelin, Rinpoche. Kandrelin. Gangisina, natsu kanga, te chemba yomari. Kashe nientu, kashe ranje, kache, parshin tepa, kashe, ngai tepa. Then the natsu, the natsu kanga kakare, natsu susu, the denje dana, pain, kandrelin. Gangisina, natsu kanga kakare.
Susu dobare.
So it's really, he said it's the individual's dupa, kind of need or desire or want, right? What not wish, dupa. What's the best way to is dupa? It's like wish or inclination.
Yeah, inclination. I mean, just that phrase, sozer dupa, just to translate it in like a straightforward colloquial sense, I usually can just say it's up to you. It's up to the person. But what does that mean itself? It's up to you. And then you have a similar question. Well, it's your desire, your inclination, your aspiration, all those kinds of things are implied by it. Yeah.
I see. So it's up to you is the best colloquial. I see. Thank you. It's up to you. But what does that mean? It's up to your capacity. It's up to your inclination. And how do we know? How do we find out where we're at? The mirror of the Dharma. Right? There's no other way we can find out where we're at is then that be honest with ourselves and then look at the Dharma, right? And just be honest with ourselves. And sometimes that's not as easy, right? Because we're grasping, we have all these mix of mess up going on in our mind. But the Buddha said, we'll all become Buddhas and we're all here hearing the truth. So eventually, we'll be able to increase our capacities because of this experience we're having right now that looks at the whole thing, right? So we'll be able to, you know, increase the capacity that we're at now because we'll learn more and be able to progress according to the stages that we're at. And we'll be able to, in the long run, you know, fulfill all of our needs and others' needs, right? Because we can increase our capacity all the way to Buddhahood. That we're learning about now that maybe we aren't able to practice all the stages of or realize all the stages of, but we're certainly creating the cause for it to happen because we heard it. The wisdom arisen from hearing has to happen, right? In order to have contemplation and then direct realization.
Thank you.
Does that make sense, Alessandra?
It is perfect sense. You also have to, I mean, I have to remember the ingredient that there are times when I stand up from sitting down and get confused about why I stood up. So it's all in perspective. You know, I just have to kind of go with it and take it in smaller bites sometimes and make sure I chew and digest.
And just remember, too, whoever you are in your next life, they won't care. So don't take it as serious. Yeah. You know, sometimes you can take it all so seriously. Just remember that in like, you know, 20 minutes, there'll be you believing you're someone else that won't care about any of this. So,
thank you.
Not to look in a nihilistic way, but to kind of take some pressure. You know, it's been beginningless time. And, you know, the Buddha, according to the perfection vehicle, got bodhicitta, this thing that I don't have, this mind that wants to become a Buddha day and night. And then three countless eons, right? Accumulated merit and learned. Like, that's a lot of lives. So take yourself seriously, because we have a human rebirth right now and we have the opportunity in our hand, but realize that it's a long race, right? What's the word? It's a marathon, not a sprint, but sprint. But sprint if you can. If you can sprint the marathon, do it, but it's a marathon.
Thank you, Jeff.
We have to be honest with ourselves. Can we sprint an entire marathon, right? Like Rinpoche said, if a pig watches what a tiger does, right, and tries to be agile and run and do all these fancy things a tiger does, a pig's just going to break its leg. We have to realize where we're at and what our capacity is and practice within that scope. He used to tell that in English. He'd always say, like, tiger running. Okay, running here, this, okay. Pig running, leg broken. Chandu Rinpoche. Are we good? Let's go offline. Oh, prayers. Concluding mandal offering and dedication prayer. Oh, I was told myself I'd read this. And this is so we were gonna, in my mind, just go over the truth of suffering. And why is it that this propels us? What's this jetpack about, right? So we go to the abbreviated stages of the path by Lama Tsongkhapa, the Lamrim Duden. Sometimes it's called like the song of spiritual experience, I think, lines of experience. It says, like, it talks about, we have this human basis that we can do so much with, right? Like it starts out, it says, this working basis of a human form endowed with all of its liberties is superior to a wish-granting gem. Moreover, such is only obtained this very one time. Difficult to acquire and easily lost, it passes in a flash like lightning in the sky. Considering how easily this can happen at any time and realizing that all worldly activities are as immaterial as chaff, you must try to take advantage of its essential significance at all times, day and night. I, the yogi, have practiced in this way. If you too seek liberation, please cultivate yourself this way. The fundamental ground is scented with incense and strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha land and offer it. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure realm. I dedicate whatever virtues I have collected for the benefit of the teachings and of all sentient beings, and in particular for the essential teachings of Venerable Lozandrapa to shine forever. I send forth this jeweled mandala to you, precious guru. I dedicate all this virtue to emulate the knowledge of the hero Manjushri and likewise Samantabhadra as well. With whatever dedication is praised as supreme by all the conquerors who traverse the three times, I also dedicate all my roots of virtue for the sake of auspicious deeds. In that pure land surrounded by snowy mountains, you are the source of all benefit and happiness. All powerful Avalokiteshvara, Tenzin Gyatso, may you stay until samsara's end. I pray for the long life of the precious Tensor Wandok, upholder of scriptural and realizational doctrines, spiritual friend who trained extensively in the five great philosophical texts with exceptional wisdom and perseverance. Suji Rumchi Puti Shabi Denona. All right, so we'll just go off.